You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
My nan absolutely adored him, and we got her number 18 on the back of her shirt, which is Kermigan's number. And instead of Jan Kermigan, we got Nan Kermigan.
Oh, love it.
Football at the end of the day. Football. It's a funny old game.
It's a game of you
are. Comedians talking about football.
Comedians talking about football.
Comedians talking about football.
How you doing, guys? Welcome to episode 16 of Comedians Talking About Football. I'm Sam Michael, and we're about to talk all things AFC Bournemouth with the brilliant Andrew White. But just before then, I want to let you know that in a few episodes' time, we're going to come to the end of Series 2 of the podcast. Yeah, that's right, as the 2020-2021 season comes to the end, so must the series. But I thought I'd finish off, maybe we'd end things with a special where I'm going to bring back a few previous guests and maybe we can answer some listeners' questions. I get a few tweets every now and then, and it'd be really great to answer them all in one special episode. So if you have a question for us, and keep them comedy and football related, I don't want to be answering questions about vaccines or is the world flat. So if you have a question for us, then do please get in touch, drop us an email, comedianstalkingaboutfootball@gmail.com, or you can get hold of us on Twitter or Instagram, where you should be following us anyway. We've got the same handle for both, @comtalkfootypod. That's @comtalkfootypod. You can drop us a message on Instagram or Twitter. So yeah, get in touch, drop us a question, and I guarantee we're going to answer every single one. So yeah, today's episode then is all about AFC Bournemouth, and we recorded this episode as AFC Bournemouth had just flown in to the playoffs, the championship playoffs, and I'm recording this intro literally as Bournemouth have just gone 1-0 up against Brentford in the first leg of the playoffs. And if all goes to plan and I get my editing arse in gear, then this should go out between the first and second leg. Therefore, Andrew's optimism is kind of... well, we'll see, won't we? If you're listening to this down the line and Bournemouth got promoted, brilliant. If you're listening down the line and they crashed out, having been 1-0 up in the first leg... yeah. So, anyway, right. So this is Andrew White talking all things AFC Bournemouth. And to introduce him, a bit of Mini Birch.
Oh, Eddie had a dream at -17. We had no monies, we brought the players on loan. Oh, we play from the back with pace and attack. He went to Burnley, but then he came back. Oh, Eddie had a dream with -17. We had no monies, we bought the players on loan. we play from the back with pace and attack. He went to Burnley, but then he came back.
So I'm here with Andrew White. Hello, Andrew.
Hello, Sam. How are you?
I'm very well. You doing okay?
I'm good, yeah.
We're recording this on a very hot evening.
It is. It's very warm, and I've not been out all... I've had Zoom calls and stuff all day, so this, I've just seen the sun slowly slip away from me.
Oh, bless you. So I'm going to capture your last few hours of sunlight. It's a lovely sunny day, as I said, here at the Vitality Stadium. As I like to introduce all my guests by going down to the stadium where we're recording. And I like that you said just before we started that that is a very common phrase used on FIFA.
Oh, yeah, really. Every time I load up a career mode, I reckon that's every other game they'll say, very sunny day here at the Vitality.
I love FIFA commentators. They're just, there's something that they'll never, no matter how well the development gets for any football game, whether it be Pro Evo, whether it be FIFA, they're never going to quite get the commentary right. And I love that.
What they should do is they should just program in some like really, because you know, like commentators always come up with some ridiculous phrases,
yeah,
but make them like super rare, like one in a million games. So just occasionally they'll just say some ridiculous analogy and then you'll be like, oh, maybe it is like a real commentator.
Yeah, exactly. That would make sense. They do just sort of have, they try and make it realistic sometimes by having a bit of a discussion, but they'll come at really weird times. You'll just do like an amazing kind of bit on the ball leading up to the most amazing goal you've ever scored. And they're there going, well, Reading have had a few seasons in the top flight. It's been hit and miss since then. And well, you're right there. They've had a difficult few seasons on show goal. It's just really random. Have you been playing a lot of FIFA in lockdown?
No, I haven't actually. I played it for like about a stint of a month and then I've just packed the Xbox away and I've not played it since.
That's very good control there from you. I think that's all I've been playing a lot really in lockdown.
I think it was poorly timed because I got back into it just towards the end of last season's Premier League and then I fell out of love with football for no reason.
Well, let's talk about, I'm sure, a time where you were in love with football, and that is between 2015, 2020. You spent five seasons in the Premier League, which is, I think, incredible for Bournemouth, especially that they were written off quite early on. And only from the fact that that happens to all new teams when they come up. There's this kind of, well, they won't survive sort of attitude to them. And so if we go back to last season in the Championship, Eddie Howe, an amazing individual, not just for Bournemouth fans, but I think for a lot of football fans really respect him. You know, there's a lot of eye on him still and where he'll go next. Not that you want to talk about that. Let's talk about his time at Bournemouth. So what was the feeling as you were, because I didn't follow Bournemouth too much that season in the Championship. I wouldn't have put them down like a lot of people as a team who would have gone up. Did you feel confident from the very early on that they were going to make that instant jump up to the Premier League or?
I was definitely hopeful. I don't think I would never imagine the season we had. I think our first game, we won like 4-0. And I put a screenshot of the league on Facebook, like, well, end the season now, we're winning it. And then several months later, we did, which was good. But I was kind of hoping for playoffs at best. I mean, we've kind of been around those playoff places before then. The season before, I think we like finished 10th or something like that. So it wasn't beyond the realms of possibility to fight for a promotion push, but I'd never imagined winning it like the way we did.
Yeah, I mean, and all credit, well, you had a great team, that goes without saying, but a lot of the credit goes to Eddie Howe. What was the feeling with Eddie Howe? Because obviously he sort of started his management career then at Bournemouth. He went off to Burnley for a little while and came back. Was he always in your mind the one manager who would get you to the Premier League if there ever was a manager to get you there?
Well, it's hard for me to... I probably got into football when I was about 8 or 9. But my first football game was under Eddie Howe. So I've literally never known, other than that stint when he went to Burnley, which was just kind of like it's just a nothing period, nothing really happened, no kind of notable transfers or anything. It's hard to say like, oh, Eddie Howe is the man, because he is literally the only man I've ever known, other than the last season with Tindall and Woodgate.
Yeah, I mean, it's a funny one, because it's hard to believe that, especially that saying that you spent 5 years there, that in the, I think it was 2012, 2013 season, you're in League One. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just incredible, and a very quick jump, I think. Unless you're, with all respect, a big, well-known sort of regular Premiership team like Leicester or Southampton, mm-hmm. that's not really been done before. And so to make that jump was really incredible. Do you have memories of when you got promoted? Where did you manage to get to the games during that season, or do you remember watching it when they went up
To the Premier League?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I did. That's kind of the. But I'm going to sound like a glory hunter, but that is when I started properly going more regularly. Before that, I was doing going to be a real clash of interests in a moment. Before that, I had a regular commitment to do musical theatre training every Saturday,
right,
which normally clashed with the games. But that was my last year at the theatre company. So I started going to more Bournemouth games, and it just happened to be the season we went up. So yeah, I managed to get to quite a few. Watched it on telly whenever I could. That's when I properly got into Bournemouth.
And are you local to the area, or were you local to the area? Were you, is that where you grew up? Or
yeah, so all my family are from, like, my nan and my grand have been supporting since the 40s.
Oh, bless her.
And she's a real Bournemouth fan.
Love she'll it.
Be on the terraces looking for a scrap, old Val. so our family's always kind of been from the Bournemouth area. I probably grew up in Bournemouth till about 11, and then we moved to Salisbury. So not too far.
No, not too far at all. So still very much your local team. You get added points for that here on Comedians Talking About Football.
Good.
We've not had one Man United fan from anywhere north of London yet. So, you know, it's hard to find. I wonder I'm going to find a Man United fan from Manchester. But it's done a lot from what I've heard of friends who are Bournemouth supporters. That it's done a lot for the area in the fact that Bournemouth were always considered this kind of League Two, League One team. I mean, at one point, they nearly slipped out of the Football League altogether. Around the time Darren Anderton was playing for them. What a legend. And then what happened is, obviously, these years in the Premier League, it's built up such a fan base there. And it completely makes sense. I mean, it's like you were sort of joking that I was a glory supporter, I started going. But that's what happens, you know, when a local team start playing really well. It's much better you go and support them than start watching Chelsea on the telly or Man City on the telly. So I think it's great. And it does bring in more people like yourself who may not have started off having such an interest in football, though you probably didn't have a choice, what with your nan Val being such a fan. But it's great that you got to go down there. Not only did you get to go down when they were getting better, but you got to go and see them go all the way up to the Premier League.
And I although it's sparse, the games I went to, I do have programs and have been to games in League Two and One. So I've got kind of like a glory hunting denial passport with.
Yeah, you want to keep them.
Exactly. I totally agree. Like, as much as you can. To be fair, the Bournemouth fan base isn't kind of very aggressive or gatekeepy. It probably lives up to a lot of the stereotypes of Bournemouth and Bournemouth fans. So nobody got really a lot of hate for being a glory supporter, unless they were moaning on the forums, in which case somebody would be like, oh, I remember the bloody 80s when we were doing this.
You said that could be you now. Say a couple of years time, if they get back up to the Premier League, you can be, I was there in League Two, boy. I was there.
Yeah. Exactly.
It is good. Was there much of a reaction? Because sometimes we had this at Reading where we were similar in the fact that we were kind of down in what was the equivalent of League Two, League One for a while, and then we kind of went up to the Premier League. And in the typical fashion that you can never keep football fans happy, once we're in the Premier League for a season or two, we had the kind of, do you know what? I actually preferred it when we were down in League One and tickets were actually affordable and things like that. But I think actually Bournemouth have kept quite loyal. I mean, obviously prices are going to go up when you go to the Premier League, but it seems like it's a nice club to support. It's not one of these teams that have just pumped loads of money in and bought loads of top players and raided players from City or United or wherever. There seems to still be this sort of, you know, it seems to still be a well-run club. Is that still right?
I think so. I mean, obviously, you never really know what's going on behind closed doors, but there's been no worrying whispers. A few conspiracy theories on the. I'm not on the Facebook forums anymore. I can't stand the people that post in them. But even the kind of the worst rumors were literally just people putting two and two together to make five rather than actual any worries. So I think it's okay. There's a few people who are a bit concerned now that maybe our owners probably going to look to leave if we don't go back up.
Right.
I can believe, but at the moment that's not obviously promotion is the main thing, and then we'll worry about everything else after.
And how do you think you've been doing this season? So obviously it's a hard season for Bournemouth because you've gone down, and it's not. I think it's harder to have spent something like 5 or 6 years in the Premier League and then go down more than it is to kind of do a season and then you're back where you were. Do you know what I mean? So you can kind of be in the Championship, go up and go back down again, and it's not always. I think you look at like what Fulham have done; they've managed to bounce back up, but I think when you've had that long, and then. You drop, and then not only that, you then lose Eddie Howe as well, and obviously mm-hmm. you've got Jason Tindall there with Woodgate, and you're sitting seventh at the moment, looking quite good. Got some good players there. Solanke's looking great, but obviously you lost a few players on the way down as well, which always happens when you drop down to the Championship. Do you think they've got the power to bounce back up, or was that just one generation?
It's tough to say. We definitely have the squad for it. You know, when they're playing well, this current squad can turn over any team in the league and score goals. And our defense is always that's been a recurring problem over the last decade. But we could always score loads. I mean, when we went up, I think we scored like over 100 goals or something that season.
Yeah,
it was. So yeah, I think we can do it. It's about the confidence. You know, I think there's a nice mix of people who are kind of newer, younger, and want to establish themselves and make a name for themselves, and a bunch of people who perhaps are more experienced and wanting to move on.
Yeah.
So they also need to put in a shift because they need a good transfer. So I think there's surely enough will. I hope anyway.
Certainly. And I mean, let's talk about the early days of the Premier League. So we say early days, we're only talking 15-16 season. You go in, you finish 16th. Did you expect to stay up at the time? Because like you said, you scored 100 goals going up, so you had a really good attacking force at the time. I think Joshua King was your top goal scorer in that first season in the Premier League. Did you expect to stay up?
I did, but I'm a very optimistic person, I think, generally, especially with football. I always expect us to win. Even when we were facing up against, by the end of the 5 years, I was no longer expecting results from Man City. But in the early days, I was still going thinking, well, we could do something.
Yeah.
I think I kind of believed in us. I knew we played nice football, and if we stuck to it, I went to the first ever game. It was against Aston Villa. We lost 1-0. Rudi Gustad header in the second half.
Right.
It was very gutting. It was weird as well. They did a retro day. Everyone had to go in retro Bournemouth shirts.
Brilliant.
But the reason was because they hadn't got the new kit out yet.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They were like, oh, it's a retro day. Don't go to the club store. Don't look in there.
That's amazing. Absolutely love that.
Yeah, it was good. It was a good, from that moment, I think it was clear that we were going to play the football we were playing in the Championship. Although obviously we'd have to learn to adapt. I think one of the things we never really got over was in the Championship, you can have several touches in the box. In the Premier League, you don't have that same luxury.
Yeah.
From that day, from that first game, I thought we had enough passion and skill to stay up.
It is good, especially when you see a team go up, survive, and with a manager in Eddie Howe who had never managed in the Premier League before and is still considered now to be a bit of a rookie. I mean, you look at some of the names of the teams where they mentioned Eddie Howe might go next. Some of them are saying, oh, he's not experienced enough to go to Arsenal. He's not experienced enough to go to Man United. You think, yeah, but this guy has come straight into football. And not only did he keep them up in the league, he like we said before, they didn't spend crazy money on keeping Bournemouth up there. And also, he played a very sort of beautifully basic style of football. And I mean that in the sense that he would play like a 4-4-2 formation. There was kind of, you had your strikers playing very old school, especially Joshua King and Callum Wilson. There was something very old school about the way they played. They weren't out on the wing. They weren't having to cut in. They would just get the ball and score, which I don't think many teams are doing enough of these days.
Yeah, I've always loved Eddie's style of play. My two main criticism, or three actually, would be very rarely has a plan B. He'll always keep playing in that style because he doesn't really have a plan B for different teams. Defense has always been a little bit leaky, and transfers have been dodgy. But I think you send him to a club like Arsenal, he's going to have a infrastructure around him. People who are more experienced who can kind of guide him. He's not so big-headed that he's going to like turn away all the mentorship of more experienced heads. I think he could easily revitalize a lot of teams, and some fans don't give him the respect.
No, fair enough. I didn't realize that, because in my mind, the way Eddie Howe's seen as like for a neutral, should we say, or just a fan of football, he's very highly regarded. But you forget sometimes that a manager's most criticisms come from the club they actually manage in. So what were the criticisms that were really coming from fans who, as you say, seemed quite unhappy with him at times?
Yeah, I mean, there was like a lot of discontent. I think even that season we got relegated, no one was too angry with him. But yeah, there was certainly a kind of a recurring pattern of games that we do badly in, and the recurring pattern would be slightly sloppy defenses, which was fixed a little bit when Nathan Ake came in, and he definitely made a massive difference. No plan B, yet he'd always kind of play the full, which I really like. I kind of like that style of football, but you do need to play a little bit differently. Where, for example, I think there was I can't remember whether it was in last season or the season before, but we had a 1-0 lead against Liverpool and we kept attacking, and it's just like, maybe we should throw some men behind the ball, because this is like prime Mo Salah and people like that. So we should probably do more to hold on to that lead. So yeah, a bit of a criticism for not having a plan B, and obviously some people would very much question his transfers. But for every kind of Jordan Ibe that fails, we've got somebody like David Brooks, or indeed Nathan Ake.
And one of the best players he's probably signed. It's a bit of a shame, really, because he's fallen into that gap now, Nathan Ake, where they go to a team like Man City and just get paid a lot of money to just kind of bench warm. And you think, come on, you're such a good player. I want to see more. I mean, there's been a few players who've done that over the years. I mean, Scott Sinclair did it for what could have been his prime years. Ross Barkley did it as well. Unless he can break into the Man City team, his best years will always be at Bournemouth.
He does. I think he does deserve a bigger club. As much as I love Bournemouth, we are a very tiny club.
Yeah.
I still think he could easily play week in, week out for a first team at somewhere like Leicester or Everton, and, you know, play European football. Hopefully. So, yeah, I think that there's options for him to step up without making such a... Yeah, it's a shame if he just spends his prime years on the bench.
Yeah, I agree. So speaking of players like that coming in, let's talk about the 16-17 season. So this is your second season in the Premier League. So the first one, you finished 16th, which I think is respectable. So that you could call that maybe, you'll have to remind me because I don't remember too well. I don't think there was much of a relegation battle on your hands. There was certainly, if you're anything sort of below 14th, 15th, there's always a bit of a worry, but you seemed kind of all right. So you stay in the Premier League. 16th is quite respectable for a first season manager who's never done it before. Second season you're in there, you finish 9th, knocked out of the FA Cup and the League Cup in the third round, in both cases. You stay 9th, and I've got a list here of the players you had that season, and they're just insane when you look at it. I mean, you had Dan Gosling, obviously, you know, still I've always rated him as a player ever since he was young. You had Andrew Sermon in there, Mark Pugh, Benik Afobe, another player we had at Reading for a while, was really, really good. Callum Wilson, Adam King, Joshua King, Lewis Cook. You had Tyrone Mings there, Lewis Graben, Moussa, Jack Wiltshire on his first loan spell, I believe, Jordan Ibe, and it's just so many good players you had there, to the point where you could actually send the likes of Glenn Murray, who was a goal machine, out on loan. What are your memories of that season? Because that would be probably, well, it is the most successful season really in Bournemouth's history.
It was amazing. It was a really good season that, there just seemed to be a lot of hope for, you know, establishing ourselves. We were getting in a nice base of players, as you were saying there, and it just felt like if we could get the combination right, we'd probably have a few a long stint, which obviously a fairly long stint in the end. But I have more of my programs here actually. In preparation, I thought I'd get all my programs.
Oh, love it!
So they should be in year order. So let me see what games I went to that season. I'll probably ring ring a few more bells. It was that season that Benik Afobe in was a very strange one. He started off so well. I think he scored a goal like maybe on his first game, and everyone was like, "Oh, we've got ourselves a Premier League striker." But it just completely fell off the wagon, which was very frustrating because we had a really good song for him. It's always annoying. That's West Ham. Oh my God. When we come to the relegation season, we'll talk about the worst game I've ever been to.
Yes, that's good. I was going to say, while you're looking through them, I mean, there's some of the results that season were really important. I mean, getting wins over like the likes of Leicester, who were at the time, Premier League champions. You had wins over West Ham. I remember that being a good game, 3-2.
That will be in here somewhere.
Oh, excellent!
That was amazing. That game. Oh my goodness! That was a real joy one of my favorite ever football games. Just I got free tickets as well because the problem is with Bournemouth Stadium is it's so small, so it's very hard to get tickets. It's like it's like a points based system. Priti Patel would love it. You have to go to games and then earn it on your account. And it's a bit of a catch 22 because if you don't have enough points to get to a game, you'll never earn points. But the benefit is because it's such a small club, I have so many friends and family that are season ticket holders or have enough points that if they can't make a game, they will often text me and say, "Do you want to come?" And that West Ham game was one of those occasions. Here it is. Junior Stanislas on the front.
Hey. From the very game itself, 3-2.
Yeah. Beautiful game.
And another very, I'd say, popular game from that season was from December 2016, which was the 4-3 win over Liverpool. And I find that quite an important game because I feel like that was the real first time. I remember it was very first on Match of the Day. It was the game everyone was talking about then. And in my mind, it was the first time everyone went, "Oh, hang on. Bournemouth are really serious about this and they're going to do well." Because it wasn't just a good win over a very hard team, but it came not long after, I think, you'd smashed Hull like 6-1, something like that. Are you there as well?
I was at that game as well.
Hey, there we go.
Andrew Sermon on the front cover there.
There he is. So, you know, they've got this point. You started off the season really well, I think, getting some really good results. And that kind of continued through the season. And obviously you finished ninth. And I think that's just got to be probably the season that everyone will remember the most fondly in the Premier League.
100%. We felt like one of the big boys. And I think we still are. I mean, I'm never sure what other clubs' perception of us are, but I don't think anyone, if we go back up, I don't think anyone other than a few minority voices would be like, "Oh, Bournemouth, what are they doing in the Premier League? You know, they're just a boring kind of because I feel like sometimes when West Brom go up and down, they get a lot of stick for just being like filling in the numbers. But I think because of that, the legacy of that season and results like that Liverpool game, I think it would be unfair for anyone to criticise us of filling in the numbers.
No, absolutely not. And also you produce so many good players as well. I mean, the likes of Callum Wilson and Nathan Ekki and these players who went on to join other clubs, right or wrongly, whether they should have left or not, but certainly. And then, and of course, as well, I know we're going to keep repeating his name, but it left the legacy of Eddie Howe as well. You know, Eddie Howe will most probably be back managing in the Premier League in the next couple of seasons. And I can see him staying managing in the Premier League for quite a while. So, yeah. Certainly a legacy left there.
He's for sure. And he's really young still. I think he was, up until that last season, he was the youngest Premier League manager. I can't remember who. I think it might have been Arteta, actually, that just overtook him. But yeah, even still now, he's really young by managerial standards. I think you're right. I think he'll have a long, prosperous career ahead of him. And hopefully he comes back to Bournemouth.
That's the thing, though. I was going to ask that about whether you'd have him back. And I suppose it's different from experiences I've had with managers, but we had an experience with a manager who got us promoted. He was similar, in a similar vein of a player who'd been around the club for a long time. And eventually he kind of almost on merit became the manager. He was kind of assistant manager, then became the manager. And he was brilliant for us, got us promoted to the Premier League, took us to a championship playoff final the season before we got promoted, took us to an FA Cup quarterfinal, I think 2 years in a row. And when he came back, it was a disaster. And do you think there's always that difficult thing of you should never go back? And if he did come back, is there a danger? Do you think it's hard? It's a harsh question, really. I don't think the manager I'm talking about for us was Brian McDermott. I don't think it's really affected his legacy, his first legacy at the club. But I think some people still sort of go, oh, he was a great manager. Remember when he came back, though? And is there a danger that he might not want to ruin that legacy he had the first time round?
Yeah, I think it's especially odd because it'll be his third return, obviously, after he came back from Burnley. So, I mean, that went very well. But, you know, that went very well.
That's true.
Ninth in the Premier League.
I think third time lucky.
Yeah, we might get a European spot. Yeah. I think that's the only way he can really improve on his legacy is kind of be competing for the European spots. It's weird how his first season, going from like second bottom in the first stint, from second bottom in the whole football league to promotion players, that kind of 40 position leap is an amazing achievement. But a similar achievement for him now will be like a 3 position leap in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Something, everything becomes so much harder. So I don't know. I don't know about his legacy. I think for nostalgia, I'd like him back, really. I think he can do no wrong for Bournemouth fans.
I think that's true. I think that's very true. That's very much the case of a lot of managers. Doesn't really, a bit like when Kevin Keegan went back to Newcastle, whether they got relegated or not, it didn't really matter. It's Kevin Keegan. And I think the same is very much Eddie Howe for Bournemouth. I think he'll always be one of the first people you think of when you think of a Bournemouth football club. FC Bournemouth, got that wrong. I need to remember to get that absolutely right. I know people, you've got to get that right.
People get very angry about every time the league starts, they're like, they put us on B, but we're technically A. This is ridiculous.
Well, I did remember.
People get very angry.
I remember when they started. I saw someone wind up a load of Arsenal fans because their first season in the Premier League, they were down as AFC Bournemouth. So therefore they were first as the season starts. Everything's in alphabetical order and they were the top. And someone wrote, for the first season in 15 years, Arsenal will begin the season second as opposed to first, Wenger out. And I thought that was really funny.
The funny old game. Comedians talking about football.
Before we go on to the unfortunate talking about the 1920 season, not 1920 as in the 2019 2020 season. I wouldn't want to go back that far.
I did. There was a brief moment of worry.
Let's go back to the 1900s, sir. So I'm going to hit you with what we have on this show. We have emergency facts, where to prove I've done some sort of research for your club, I hit you with a fact about your football club, and you just let me know whether you know it or not. So let's start with, as we've been talking about, my faux pas I made just now with the name. I'm going to throw it back at you, Andrew White, and say, excuse me, you do know, don't you, that AFC Bournemouth isn't actually the real name. The club operates under the name AFC Bournemouth, although it is not the club's official registered name. The club was formed in the late 1800s under the name Boscombe FC, but later adopted the currently used AFC Bournemouth in 1972. The team's official registered name, however, is Bournemouth and Boscombe Athletic Football Club, the name the club is registered under since 1923.
We went all the way back to the 1920s. yes, we still chant Boscombe. When there is a corner or a dangerous free kick, we will chant, well, half of the fans will chant Boscombe, and then the other half will chant back of the neck. Back of the net. Boscombe, back of the net. Boscombe, back of
I like
net.
That. I never noticed that. I never knew about that.
Well, I suppose, yeah, if you don't know, because if you don't know the local area of Bournemouth, Boscombe's just a meaningless word, isn't it?
It sounds quite cool, though. Boscombe, you know, actually, it sounds somewhere like you'd find in America, like Boscombe United.
It is, unfortunately, an absolute shithole.
not like Boscombe LA.
I genuinely think that's why they rebranded to Bournemouth, because of Boscombe kind of ended up being the divier area of the south coast.
I'll hit you with another fact. See, yes, you got that? That's what should we have. This one I found very interesting because I've always wondered this. AFC Bournemouth's badge features a footballer heading a ball, but although the man in the crest does not possess any predominant features and looks quite generic, the character was created in honour of the club icon, Dickie Dowsett, who had scored nearly 80 goals for the club from 1957 to 1962. So the man in the crest is Dickie Dowsett.
Yes, yes, it is indeed. Before that, it was just a pair of cherries, which is... I mean, I don't know. I don't mind the badge. It's not a wondrous feat of graphic design.
Yeah, it's quite modern, isn't it? It's quite it's got quite a thing about it. I mean, I don't know what Dickie Dowsett looks like. Did he have long, straight, black and white hair?
Yeah, he actually had dreads. It would have been cancelled nowadays.
Down his neck.
I've not spotted that before. Yeah, that's properly. Oh, he's a proper freak of nature, isn't he? Oh no, I've never noticed that before.
It's quite cool, though. I mean, obviously, it's supposed to be the swish, I assume, of him coming up for the head. But I thought it was very interesting that he's got a character. I think that should be the mascot. I think you should just get a completely person dressed from head to toe in white with ears halfway down his neck and black and white dreads, just walking around like that. With his head back.
You're going to take the place. I wonder if there's a picture of him in here. There normally is in like the kids section. There, Cherry Bear. That's our current mascot.
Cherry Bear.
It is proper shit, isn't it?
Well, we've got Kingsley the Lion.
And
yeah, we've got Kingsley the Lion, which is quite cool. I think he's only kept kind of following because somebody set up a Twitter account called Pervy Kingsley, because there was a picture of Kingsley the Lion having his picture taken with some women, and that became the profile picture. And someone's on Twitter, and I don't know how they've ever got rid of it. It's got thousands of followers. It's just a guy pretending he's Kingsley the Lion. He's just perving over daytime TV, women on the TV. He literally just tweet all day, oh, Kate Garraway again. Whoa, wouldn't mind. So to tackle this, they said, right, we can't have Kingsley look like a sexist or some sort of, dare I say it, male slag. So what they did is they brought in Queensley the Lion to keep him tamed. So now there's Kingsley and Queensley, and they've made it very apparent that they are a couple. They are monogamous and they are together, and there is no funny business. So that's what they do with them.
I would argue that makes the Pervy Kingsley account sleazier, surely.
You see what they get up to. When there's a goal scored, I've seen Kingsley and Queensley get very close with each other in the middle of the match, Dad. So it's a shame, because I think they've missed a trick there. I think if you can have more than one mascot, you're laughing. And I think there's a real missed opportunity there for Bournemouth to get just two people dressed as cherries and have them sort of run around together. And it would look like a pair of red bollocks, but...
Yes, yeah, that is a
but I'd still prefer have issue. A pair of bollocks as my mascot than that boiler that West Brom have got.
It's why do we have mascots? Like, that's such an American thing. Why has that happened in English football?
Do you know what I think it's purely there for? And it's to warm up the away fans. Have you ever seen the mascot just go past the away fans and wave to them?
I have, never at Bournemouth, because he looks like a children's entertainer. It would not be taken seriously. But I've seen it before, and it is very effective.
It is very. We have it. So they'll normally go to the kids. They'll go to, like, the, you know, the family end, and the kids will come forward, have pictures taken. And then about 10 minutes before kickoff, he walks to the away fans and just goes, gives them, like, a wave and blows them kisses while they're all shouting, "Fuck off, Kingsley, you cunt!" Like, just shouting. And there's nothing funnier in my mind than watching away fans get angry at a cuddly looking mascot. It absolutely cracks me up. And have you ever seen, while we're on the subject of mascots, there's probably an Instagram and a Twitter page of mascots during 2 minute silences.
Yeah.
Is there anything more? Because now, whenever I see a mascot when I go to an away game, I think, what would he look like during a 2 minute silence? And it is always so funny when they just stood there. And I imagine Cherry Bear would be very much a strange presence during a silence for any reason.
I don't think I've ever seen him on the pitch for a silence. I think Bournemouth very tactful in, like, tucking him away during remembrance.
Which is a sad, really, because then on that day, because you've got obviously, yeah,
Cherry. Well, he's getting a bunch of tweets abusing, going, "Oh, Cherry Bear, where's your poppy?"
Yeah, that's what you're gonna get. You're gonna get, "Oh, Cherry Bear, show no respect as usual, bloody Marxist." That Marxist, yeah. Cherry Bear. I haven't seen this, but do the mascots take the knee?
Oh my goodness.
Because I don't, maybe they're not about at the moment, because during lockdown with no crowds, they're not really needed. That'd be a sad thing to do, wouldn't it? With no crowd, just be a mascot stood at the side of the pitch. The knee, quite rightfully, is not going to go anywhere, and it's going to remain in the Premier League and the EFL. And I'm going to wonder whether seeing Cherry Bear get down on one knee, if that's going to be a thing, or like the West Brom boiler will get down on one. It's going to be very strange.
What do you do if you're a boiler? You don't have knees.
You can't dance either, really, but he's breaking all the boundaries for what we expected of what a boiler can and can't do.
I wonder if he's corgi registered.
I hope so. I don't want it, you know. I think they should have, like, something that can see if there's been any sort of leak, because if he's dancing around the place just letting carbon monoxide out, it could be very dangerous. Very dangerous.
Real tragedy. I've Googled it. There's some, like, American stories, but I can't see anything in the Premier League.
I assume they're not. You've got to think Gunnosaurus has been made redundant.
Which is a shame, because he's the most personally protected equipment person in there.
I'll never forget, you know, on BBC, they do the score updates. They give, like, text updates. I remember I screenshotted it, and I get it out every Christmas. It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen. It was on Boxing Day. Arsenal were losing 3-0, I think. And I just remember there was a text update, and it said, "Gunnosaurus has just scored a penalty against Santa in front of a disinterested crowd, followed by booing." And I just thought, that's the saddest thing I've ever seen. And there was just a picture of Gunnosaurus walking off looking really sad, followed by Father Christmas. I haven't had much mascot chat on this podcast, actually. I'm really glad we're finally getting down to it, because I think
it's a genuine issue and he's discussing
it. Is
it will be. I think Bournemouth have stopped taking the knee.
Have they?
There was some club statement about how a lot of the players thought it was no, they wanted to do more. They thought it was just a gesture. I know, other players have kind of opted out, but the whole team has opted out.
Oh, okay.
Dan Juma occasionally, it's weird. He sometimes takes a knee, sometimes doesn't. I don't think Cherry Bear will unfortunately be taking the knee.
Right. So that's that's the mascots taken care of. Speaking of tragedy, 2019-2020 season. Real shame. You end up getting relegated. You don't see the best from your players, such as kind of. This is such a dark change, by the way. We've gone from mascots to taking the knee to the relegation of Bournemouth FC. Yes. That's the kind of scope we have here on Comedians Talking About Football.
it's like a bloody Parkinson interview.
Isn't it? We've got plenty of time. I've got plenty of time to cover as many subjects as possible. And there's me fitting in about three different things all in the space of a minute. I was going to ask about this because, well, first of all, you mentioned that you went to one of the worst games of the season. Then
yeah. It was West Ham away. It's in the London Stadium, which is just naff.
Yeah.
B, we lost 4-0. I make a point to stick around for the whole game. That is the only game I've left early ever.
Really?
It was abysmal. That we just had no. I think we had one opportunity even near goal. It was absolutely awful. I think that was probably the game. Seeing it, because obviously when you see it live, it kind of hits home a bit more than just seeing the score update. That was the game I was like, I think we're in real trouble this year.
Because I was looking at the results, and it wasn't a very good season for you guys. Do you think the lockdown and the break had any impact on it? Do you think that was an opportunity to turn things around? Because you hadn't had the best start to the season. You were down the bottom by the time the season went into a hiatus. But I mean you went from, I think it was early November, 9th of November till the 18th of January, you had only won one game. I mean, to be fair, it was against Chelsea, but you'd only won one game and drawn one game, the rest you'd lost. So you were having a bit of a hard time, bit of a turnaround at the beginning of the year, wins against Brighton and Aston Villa, a couple of losses, then you end up going into a lockdown. Do you think there was there a feeling there that there was still time to do the great escape? I mean, let's be honest, Eddie Howe has done more incredible things. Were you optimistic coming up when things opened up again?
When we went into lockdown, there was a great debate amongst Bournemouth fans about the exact interpretation of cancelling the league. If they use one finishing model, then we'd stay up by like half a point. And if they used a different interpretation of the finishing model, then Watford would stay up and we go down by half a point. And I just think that whole attitude was kind of a little bit of our undoing, like debating the minutiae of whether we could stay up or on a technicality. You know, we should have just kind of been, everyone should have been, I mean, politically and medically, I don't know whether people should have been calling for the renewal of the league. I'm not a medical expert, obviously, but in terms of attitude, I think people should have wanted a second bite at the cherry. Excuse the phrasing there.
Nice.
So whether they wanted it like legally and medically, I think in terms of having the opportunity, I think we really should have been, as a whole club, fans and everything, should have been hoping that we had a chance to regroup and start again. And it did start to happen. I think we had a really good result against Leicester.
That's it, yeah. 4-0, I think, wasn't it?
That was like a real... And that was like one of Solanke's first proper goals for the club. Yeah. And that... If that was the first game back, I reckon we would have stayed up. But as it was, I think we went to Crystal Palace Crystal Palace came to us and we were just pathetic. We left the comeback just far too late.
No, it was a shame. It's nice as well, because it wasn't like you were down and out. I mean, you went down by one point under Aston Villa. And I think a lot of people thought Aston Villa were done, and you know, I think they thought their season was very much over, and that's what might have kept you safe. But they seem to have a bit of a better restart than you guys. But then, I mean, I don't want to get into the nitty gritty of it, but there is the controversy over, was it an Aston Villa goal and against Sheffield United?
It was a Sheffield United goal.
Yes, it against
that wasn't given because Hawkeye
just didn't work.
It was some really rare, like one in a million chance that every angle possible for Hawkeye was blocked, and they didn't give the goal to Sheffield, which would have taken 2 points off Villa, which would have kept us up. Yeah. And ultimately, it was West Ham that sent us down, because on that last game, those last games of the season, we put in an amazing performance against Everton, like exactly what we needed to do. Really great result. And all we needed was West Ham to score, just to score against Villa. And they didn't care. Why would they care? You know, they were safe. They didn't have anything to play for. They just saw out a 0-0 draw. And it wasn't enough.
And then obviously the Championship, and obviously you haven't been able to go to a game this season, but how have you found the start to the Championship for Bournemouth?
Up and down. At the beginning, I really thought, like, boom, we're getting back out there. Tyndall's got to prove, you know, he wants to prove himself. Let's do this. It's still, so we often have a dip in form around January, February time. That's quite common in the life cycle of Bournemouth to have that little dip. So I was expecting us to have a little bit of a dip. I don't know why. I don't know whether it's the psychological or just pure coincidence, but I'm always prepared for a little bit of dip in form. But that it just came a little bit too early. It came just before Christmas, really.
And
it was, we're recovering now with Woodgate in charge. I find it very frustrating, because clearly by some of our performances, we can turn over any team in this league. I mean, the discrepancy between our first game against Reading and the second game against Reading is just absolutely crazy. Our first game we won, came back from 2-0 down, was it? Or two, can't remember. We were
2-0
down,
yeah.
It was 2-0 down, and we came back to win 4. But yeah, we came back to win 4-2, which was just like, wow, that's an amazing result.
It was, and then, for you.
For us. And then you just trounced us. Second game of the season, you just completely trounced us.
They call it revenge month, the old month of January. I think I was going to ask about when Eddie Howe went. Did you have someone in mind who you wanted to come in as manager? Would you have liked someone at this point to have been experienced, someone like a Chris Hughton, who's got experience of getting teams straight back up into the Premier League? Would you wanted to go for them for quite a big name, or were you happy for them to go similar to how they've gone before, with letting someone who's got history at the club get themselves involved?
I was happy to give Tyndall a chance. I wasn't too aggrieved with that. I didn't. Some people saw it as kind of like a lack of ambition, but I think, you know, he's been there for as long as Eddie, and he served exactly the same time as Eddie throughout all of our previous achievements. So I think he deserved that opportunity. My main annoyance is when they gave it to Woodgate. I like the man. I think he's doing an all right job, but that is the point. I think maybe we should have got Thierry Henry. I would have loved.
Thierry Henry would have been quite amazing, wouldn't it?
Yeah, he would have been so cool.
It's a funny old game. Comedians talking about football.
I'm going to ask this now, which I ask all of all my guests, and that is to put together a five-a-side team. And that five-a-side team are of Bournemouth players, but that's just not, let's not go and pick Callum Wilson. I don't want, Joshua King and all this lot. What I want is a cult-like of players, maybe players who never quite got their chance at Bournemouth, maybe players who have been completely forgotten by generic football fans and maybe even some Bournemouth fans. So in your lifetime, have you supporting Bournemouth, the games you've been to, teams you've seen, like five players? So obviously one goalkeeper, and the rest of the outfield players are completely up to you. And I'd like you, let's put together a team of cult-like Bournemouth players.
Five-a-side.
Mm-hmm.
In goal, I would like to go. I'd like to go Arthur Boric.
Okay, Arthur Boric. Shame. I was hoping for Mr. Adam Federici, who made a maximum, I think, 3 appearances for Bournemouth. He left Reading after he had a howler in the FA Cup's semi-final and just thought, I can't do this anymore.
I really felt for him in that game. He played so well.
Yeah.
I got a soft spot for Adam Federici because he liked one of my Instagram posts once.
Oh, did he? Oh, nice.
But it would be Boric. Because we've never had a particularly strong goalkeeping with Neil Moss, who is now the current goalkeeping coach. He's probably like the got the most legacy, But in terms of actual good goalkeepers, there we'd never really had anyone reliable in the sticks for the last 10, 15 years until Boric came along, and some of the performances he put in were amazing. He got fully into the culture of the club. Mm. When we went to the promotion parade, lining the streets, he was just absolutely properly he was on loan
oh, brilliant.
Year, I think,
yeah,
and he was just properly into it, and I'm so glad he stayed, and he's been with us for ages now. Mm-hmm. big pole in our goal. We love Arte, so he'd be my goalie.
Cool. And you got four outfield players. Mm-hmm.
Now I would, if I was trying to pick the best team, I think I'd put Ake.
Okay.
And I think he's got a bit of a well-loved status, but I think cult-wise, it has to be Tommy Elphick.
Okay, yeah.
He was our captain through the promotion season, and I think I can't remember when he left, actually. One or two seasons in, he left us. He's just, he's a proper legend. He's got a massive mural somewhere in, I can't remember where it is now, but there's a painting of him in the town. He's that kind of well-loved. He had this brilliant weird ritual. Everyone would huddle in the middle of the pitch, and he'd like go put his head on the goalpost. I don't know whether he'd say a prayer or something like that, but the whole team would be huddling, and he'd have his head on the goalpost.
Oh, really? So
if you see team photos from the Elphick years, there's only 10 players in them.
Oh, wow.
It's just everyone, and then Elphick's off doing his pre-match ritual.
That's interesting. Never knew that. So we've got Tommy Elphick in there as well. I wonder if he still does that at Huddersfield. I don't know whether he still does it or not, but maybe it was just a thing.
Yeah,
he did at Bournemouth.
That's a good question, actually. I feel like it's a Bournemouth thing, but I don't
maybe
know.
So we've got three more players to go. Mm-hmm.
So Mark Pugh.
Mark Pugh is
definitely getting a look in.
Yeah.
He's commentating now. He's done a couple of games for Solent, which I like.
Oh, cool.
He's just a legend. I think a lot of people got confused whenever his name got read out in the pre-match. So he's representing AFC Bournemouth, and everyone would cheer. And then when it got to Mark Pugh, everyone would go, Pugh! But all the rival fans just thought we were booing. There's some poor guy who's had so much controversy in his life that we just boo at the very mention of his name.
It's like that were you saying Buern's thing? Like,
yeah.
Are you saying Boo or Pew? I was saying Pew. Brilliant. Excellent. Mark Pugh.
Now, if we're going for another midfielder, mm-hmm. I'd like to go current player, Jefferson Lerma.
Okay, yeah.
We all love Jefferson Lerma. But I'm going to have two strikers instead.
Go for it.
And the two strikers are Brett Pittman and Jan Kermagant.
Ah, Yanker. I was hoping you'd say Jan Kermagant. We didn't get Adam Federici there, but Jan Kermagant, yeah, absolute legend. Fantastic player. Absolutely loved him. Obviously, he was a huge part of you guys going up. He massively helped us in the season he was at Reading. But, I mean, he has got like he was kind of during the seasons where you started to really rise and be taken seriously as contenders for getting promoted. He was right at the forefront of that.
Mm-hmm. He was a massive part of that. Well, I mean, that whole promotion winning team, I think if you take out any of them, it kind of starts to fall apart. Yeah. But yeah, without his goals and some of his free kicks especially, we wouldn't have got anywhere. And there's still, like, I used to run a Twitter account called AFCB Daily, and I just tweet about Bournemouth every day and run the games and stuff. I think I ran that until I was about 15. And then
really?
I mean, it's still live if you want to go follow at AFCB Daily. It's not been updated in years. But I remember tweeting a photo of Jan Kermagant. He had Player of the Month. He was in his Reading kit, Championship Player of the Month. And it just got hundreds of, like, well, maybe not hundreds, but loads of likes just because Bournemouth fans still really loved him. My nan absolutely adored him. And we got her number 18 on the back of her shirt, which is Kermagant's number. And instead of Jan Kermagant, we got Nan Kermagant.
Oh, I love it. That is amazing. Absolutely love that, Andrew. Nan Kermagant. That's amazing. Oh, man. I'm cutting that out and sending it straight onto Twitter. Straight away, that's going to him, man. That's fantastic.
It's a funny old game. Comedians talking about football.
You've actually been very busy, I'd say, during lockdown. Even today, you were talking about you've done various bits and bobs online. I saw you were doing David Hoare's morning Twitch show. Mm-hmm. And David Hoare, big fan of him here. He does the theme tune to Comedians Talking About Football.
Yeah, I love this theme tune.
It's great, isn't it? So, yeah, so you did that. And obviously, you've been doing Gigless as well.
Yes, yeah.
And that's been a huge part of your lockdown.
It's been a massive part of my life, of my new friendships, a massive chunk of my income. It's, I got quite lucky. So again, I've got David Hoare to thank, really. He was the kind of the go-to comedy tech for Zoom shows and stuff. Lots of work with Stuart Goldsmith. And it got to a point where he was doing all of them. And I was quite friendly with him and had done like a couple of online projects. And he said, well, Catherine Bohart wants to do a new show. I can't tech it, but you're A, it's a queer focused show and you're gay. And B, I know you've got the technical ability. So he trained me up on how to stream and Zoom and stuff. And yeah, I've been running weekly since July and doing all sorts of other kind of online stuff, all kind of just from that David Hoare tutoring session.
Yeah, he's very good. He's doing loads, as we've said. And it's great that obviously you've been involved as well. And a congratulations as well. I saw you won a Chortle Award for Lockdown Legends.
Yeah, that was so cool. It was, I was never expecting to ever get... It was it's a really lovely community, and I love seeing everybody every week. But to get like industry recognition as well, it feels really cool.
Definitely, definitely. And how have you found the online gigging? Because I would say that you're one of the acts it's been shocked. I don't think we've ever actually met, Andrew.
Although I don't think so. No,
we've been on the Southwest circuit, the both of us predominantly. I don't think we've ever really met. From what I've seen, because I've seen lots of your clips, obviously I follow you on TikTok, and you've got some, and congratulations on that, because some of your excellent, shall we say, bits have gone on to be very popular on there. And I watched your full show last week on YouTube. Oh, wow. Absolutely loved it. Absolutely brilliant show. I love a show with something a little bit extra in and examples and stuff. So you've got, and it's online now, and it is still free to access, isn't it?
Yep, totally free to access.
It is just a case of if you YouTube Andrew White comedy, Andrew White stand-up, it should just come straight up as the full show.
Yes, yeah, it should. Well, thank you so much for watching. I really appreciate it.
Oh, no, it's really good. And it's great to see that those clips that you've cut out and put online have done so well. And I would say that you are one of these acts who during lockdown have gone from strength to keep your career going and your material out there. And I think that's a really, really hard thing to do. It's great. And what have you got many more projects coming up for the remainder of lockdown? And have you got plans for when things open up again?
Yeah. Definitely for things when things open and back up again, I'm hoping to. I used to run quite a few in real life nights, and from September I'm going to hopefully get back to doing that again properly. With a new passion. I think lockdown's kind of really made me realise how. I mean, for various reasons, there's not always niceness on the circuit, the payment issues, shit gigs. And it just kind of made me realize how much I love this and how much I love the circuit. Yeah. So I think I want to create more nice spaces that actually pay people and give them an audience. So I'm going to do that after lockdown. And then in the meantime, just we're carrying on Gigless every week. And I'm probably just going to start slowly winding in the other online projects. I'll keep my hand in on for TikTok and, things here and there, but I probably won't have the same full online diary that I did a month or two ago.
And in regard, obviously you do a lot of the running of the gigs, and you've been running stuff, as we said, such as Gigless, and doing lots of tech stuff, and it does take a lot of time to do. Have you had much time to think about another show? Is that something you want to work towards, whether it be 2022, or do you think you'll just get back into gigging and then carry on?
I do have a new show. I had a brand new show that I was starting to preview. I think I did my first preview like early March last year in Bristol. Okay. And then that show it was a bit of a rollercoaster of a show, really. It was kind of about my mum's, I've never told anyone this. It was about my mum's cancer battle and her surviving it.
Right.
And then Edinburgh got cancelled and the whole show kind of got shelved. And then her cancer came back like, even worse, and it was yeah, the whole show was basically irrelevant, which was the least of our worries, but you know, still it was quite a horrible time.
Oh, and then,
it was tough, but she has, despite a bad diagnosis, is now, touch wood, cancer free again.
Oh, brilliant.
So it was emotionally a very weird year. I've decided to not write any show like that until there's been like a few years grace period. So I've started working on a brand new non-health of my family dependent show.
Oh man, well I'm glad to hear your mother's doing okay. I mean, especially after obviously we know what the year's been like with COVID, but it's really been affecting cancer patients as well. It's been really hard. So glad to hear she's doing well. How about in the summer, did you manage to get back to gigging? Oh, it's so funny saying that word you said just now, in real life gigs. It's kind of a common, oh, are you doing any IRL shows? So in the summer, did you get many IRL shows in?
A few. I think it's weird. I'm getting all my tax return. I one of my favorite things is spreadsheeting. So I input my income as I go, so I can pretty much do my tax return whenever. And I was looking at my mileage for this year as we come to the end of the tax year compared to last year, and it is like 12,000, like less. It's even more. I might be getting that number wrong. But yeah, it's just absolutely crazy how few gigs I've managed. I think 3-4 maybe I got in the summer, just because there was so much competition. I didn't want to take loads of gigs on. I felt quite lucky to have the online stuff still ticking over, so it felt, I did a few kind of more open spotty things, but I felt a bit wrong taking loads of paid work. I mean, I had some new material, but I think I just slipped back into kind of my old routines. And the quality of gigs I was doing, because of some of them had to be outdoors and socially distanced, it probably wasn't be a good judge of new material anyway. I think that period was I think a lot of people I expected to hit the ground running, being like, yeah, freedom, we're gonna smash everything. I certainly did. I thought it was gonna be like a triumphant return. And I think it was a bit more of a baby steps thing than I wanted. I feel like I'm more prepared for the second reopening.
Same.
Because of learning from the first as you're saying, you've got a new appreciation of not only having it taken away and then coming, much like Eddie Howe's career in a way, taking away, then coming back, then taken away again.
Exactly. It's exactly that, isn't it? It's going to feel like this is going to be his second return to Bournemouth. Yeah.
And that's the Premier League season. So we're going to the top, Sam.
Well, I know you certainly are, man. You've done fantastic work. Your show was absolutely brilliant. If you are listening to this, I will put a link into it as well when we put out the podcast, and hopefully we can finally meet when things open up again as well, do a really gig lovely together or something. But for now, Andrew, thanks so much for coming on Comedians Talking About Football. I better hit you with one more emergency fact before we go.
Yes. While you get that, I just want to say thank you. It's been a real pleasure to talk football with somebody who isn't my parents, who aren't necessarily football switched on, or my grandparents, who are football switched on, but football switched on to the 70s. So,
well, I'll tell you what we'll do.
It's been lovely.
That's perfect, because we're going to do one more with a fact from the 70s. So after wearing, this is about the shirts and the design. So after wearing red shirts for the majority of their existence, the club switched to the red and black stripes in the early 1970s. The new look was based on popular Italian club AC Milan, who are known for their black and red striped jerseys. And that's interesting, because the last guest we had on was Maisie Adam, who's a Leeds fan. And it turned out they only started wearing white because Don Revy wanted them to be the Real Madrid of Yorkshire. So I like that in the 70s, they assume that no one in England knew of these other clubs elsewhere in the world that could just come back and nick their kits,
like in the 1700s when like people were bringing back potatoes. Yeah. Right? just invented these potatoes. It's like, well, red and black is a new color scheme that have been invented especially by Bournemouth.
Oh man.
Oh, exactly that. Exactly that. Absolutely love it. So there's the final fact for you from the 1970s for Bournemouth. And I want to leave you on this, which is to say thank you for coming on from that infamous season where you finished ninth. I've got you a shirt from that season to send over to you.
Oh, my goodness, you actually?
Yeah. This is why I know. It's, for some reason, the light's reflecting weirdly here at the Vitality, so you can't see it. Yeah, this is the shirt. I panicked for a minute when you came on because I thought you were wearing the same shirt. But this is from the season after. So that is the... I think you can just about see it there. So I'll get that address from you, get that sent over to you as a thank you.
For my goodness. Really thank you so much, Sam. Oh, I feel like I've just won one bullseye. I had a lovely time, Jim. Thank you.
It's a funny old game. Comedians talking about football.
Huge thanks once again. I wonder how they get on, Bournemouth. I should probably record two outros to this. So first of all, well done, Andrew, on predicting that Bournemouth would go up to the Premier League. Fantastic, mate. Well done. Really well done. Great chatting with you. And also, well, wasn't that embarrassing for Andrew White? All that optimism. They went 1-0 up against Brentford, then lost 7-1 on aggregate. Embarrassing, mate. Oh, stick to the comedy. Thanks very much, Andrew, for coming on. You should all follow Andrew White, by the way, on social media. He, like us, he keeps it simple by having the same handle across all social media sites, which is at @StandUpAndrew. Do follow him on there. He's brilliant on TikTok. He does these brilliant sketches where he plays his mum and dad, and they get me every single time. He's part of the Gigless team. I think that might still be going on for a little while. Obviously, they've won a Lockdown Legends Award from Chortle, so be sure to check them out if they're still going. If not, I'm sure the videos are still going to be available on YouTube or Twitch somewhere. Next episode is all about Rotherham with Jonathan Elston. It's going to not be as much as an optimistic chat, shall we say. And we recorded it the day before they were relegated. So something to look forward to there. In the meantime, as I said, you can give us a follow on social media. Follow us on Twitter or Instagram. Same handle, @ComTalkFootyPod. We're going to play out with the same tune we heard at the beginning. Little treat for you AFC Bournemouth fans. It's your chant as covered by the brilliant Minnie Birch. Go and check out her album. It's called You're Not Singing Anymore. It's got various football songs, football chants covered by her in her own unique way. It's a fantastic album. Thank you so much for letting us use your song for this episode. So playing us out, Minnie Birch.
Oh, Eddie had a dream. At -17, we had no monies, we brought the players on loan. Oh, we play from the back, with pace and attack. He went to Burnley, but then he came back. Oh, Eddie had a dream, with -17, we had no monies, we bought the players on loan. Oh, we play from the back with pace and attack. He went to Burnley, but then he came back.
Sports Social Podcast Network.